Hey guys, I really like, you guys know me. I like geeky stuff. I like comic books.
What?
Oh yeah, movies, pop culture stuff, video games.
Not what? You.
Yes, it's true. It's true.
Say it ain't so.
I know, but you know what the problem I have? I have a problem finding out how to get this stuff. I'm maybe like on a regular monthly basis, maybe?
If only there was some sort of...
like a service or
like
something.
A monthly subscription box.
Yeah.
That would fuel your geek needs.
Oh, yes. Yes.
That's a good word to use.
I got $1 million idea, guys.
What's that?
Thanks.
That's a monthly subscription box called Geek Fuel.
What? And where would you get that at?
Geekfuel.com/all of my issues.
Yes.
All right, well, my mind is blown right now. So
I'll give you $3 off.
$3
right now.
Whoa, you are blowing my mind right now.
Yeah, keep it up.
I don't know what to say. My world is upside down.
You had me at $3 off.
Yeah,
you had me at Geek Fuel.
At Geek Fuel, monthly subscription box full of awesome.
Buy it now.
Internet, and welcome to another episode of All of My Issues. In this episode, episode 31, we got the chance to sit down and talk to both Sam Ellis and Hoyt Silva. They are working together on a new project called Just Comics. Sam Ellis is known for his work on season one of Archer, Frisky Dingo, Adventure Time, among other things. One of the awesome gigs that Hoyt Silva has going on is he works for the webcomic, or he creates the webcomic for the podcast Drink Champs. Drink Champs is a podcast hosted by rappers Noriega and DJ EFN. So, without further ado, let's get started.
Self-conscious.
Oh, that's okay. I mean, if you want it, we can put the camera on too. It doesn't matter. I'm not dressed up or anything. I don't look fancy, so.
I dressed up, but just for audio.
Just for there you go. Yeah.
So, just to let you know about us a little bit, this is a very casual podcast where we diverge from the original topic quite a bit, but we'll keep tying it back to you guys the whole time. So,
yeah.
We'll ask you questions, but we want to know more about you all. So,
That's why you guys are on here. So, that's why we're interested in having you guys on here.
Sweet.
Yeah. So, I guess one of the things, just to get started out, why did you guys go into the fields that you did? What started you down that career path, I guess?
Oh, my.
Was there one defining moment that you're like, hey, I want to be an illustrator? Or
when I was 7, I was living in Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, on the Marine Corps base. My dad's in the Navy, and I was watching a lot of Transformers and G.I. Joe. I finally got the Disney Channel, I guess because my parents loved me. And if kids out there don't have that, I'm sorry, your parents don't love you. No, I'm just I'm not sorry they don't love you. I would watch a lot of the making of how movies were made. And, I just became... enthralled with wanting to do that. I I had drawn before quite a bit as a kid, mostly little robots and stuff. I watched a lot of, I guess here in the States, they called it Transor Z, but it was the Mazinger Z cartoons. And, you know, I loved Star Wars. You know, I had all the toys, and when I say all the toys, we had a lot of them, because I've got my Rancor sitting next to me, but
nice.
I like to bring him up and pretend he's a puppet. But I wanted to be one of like three things as a kid, and it was either a comic artist, a animator for Disney, or a Muppeteer. And because I loved the Muppets and Jim Henson and
You gotta love the Muppets.
Yeah. Yeah. We all do.
Yeah.
Had a profound impact on my life just being creative. And you know, I mean, I drew a lot of crappy stuff as a kid, as most kids do, but I had a lot of fun with it. And when I was seven, back to the camp was your thing, my dad came home. My dad used to lie to us a lot as kids, which my son tells me is okay. He says, lying is okay if it... What did he say, Zeke?
The lying's okay if it's
better. Lying's okay if it makes everything better, which is not good advice. You know? But he would come home and he's like, hey, I made this for you today. And he'd give me like a little He-Man card or he'd give me a little comic book. So this year he brought home... a book called Crisis, and it had a ton of superheroes in it.
Oh, and, yeah.
Who's this guy with a yellow helmet and a blue suit? Who's this really pale guy with a green cloak? Why is it? maybe that's why he's so pale. and like, whoa, why the heck? Supergirl just died. I saw that crappy movie. It wasn't just the box office that killed her. But like, I just fell in love with superheroes. And later that year, my dad gave me a copy of How to Draw Comics from Marvel Way.
Oh, I had that.
And, yeah.
You know, it's the one. If I had the camera on, I would do the poses. You know, good, better, best. you know, for the action. In that, you know, I started to look at things a little more. And then after that, I used to get the Lee James Draw 50 series. They had a bookmobile that would come around, and I'd hop on there. And I could never decide. They'd only let you check out one book. And I'm like, man, I only have this for a week. So it was either... Draw 50 cartoons, draw 50 planes or cars, or a Hagger the Horrible kind of digest, or a, you know, a Garfield book, because Garfield had a huge impact on me too. But that's kind of where I got started, and where a lot of people, like I said, you know, I drew garbage as a kid, and you know, and that's, you know, pretty much what we draw. I mean, I still draw garbage, but...
oh, come on.
People would tell me, man, you know, that's terrible. And a lot of kids, they hear that and they give up. And I was like, no, man, you're terrible. I mean, you don't have to hang it on a fridge and go, oh, this is good stuff. But, you know, never going to develop an artist if you tell him he's crap. I mean, you might. Like a serial killer artist, but you know, but I mean, that's how I got started.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, I have a lot of the similar stuff going on too. You know, when I was a kid, I really wanted to be an animator as well. Like, I thought that was like the ultimate awesome thing to do. And then I ended up going to Disney Magic Kingdom. I don't know if they still do this, but Magic Kingdom used to have this like section where you would go in and you would talk, and you'd have one of the animators would come out,
and they'd
do some kind of like quick little you know, sketch up a character or whatever and show you that they would use, you know, like a bouncing ball or whatever, how to animate stuff. And then you'd go on this like tour, and it was this, you know, walk through the studios and around the studios, and you'd see all the guys in the bullpen, you know, like drawing, like working and stuff. That tour was totally awesome. But it also made me realize that I was too lazy to be an animator. I was a kid and I realized, like, you guys got to draw like 1,000 drawings to get like 10 seconds worth of screen time. I was like, no, I'm not too into that. That's a lot of work for a little bit of payoff. So, you know, I think I just like took a drawing as like a hobby. I doodled a lot. I drew a lot in my like notebooks and stuff like that in class instead of paying attention. But nothing serious, you know, I wasn't really wanting to get into that. I ended up going to college for business at first. I was dating a girl and she convinced me that was the right idea. And to a certain extent it was, because, you know, I wasn't going to do college at all. And, then I basically did all my core classes. I had like, you know, nothing but electives left over. So I decided I was going to like just try some art classes since I always liked art. I really realized then that I preferred art a lot over business. and I switched to fine art. But then I'm not very much like, I'm very like analytical and very right brained about how I approach my art and everything. So I'm not one of those people that's just like, oh, you know, I did this cause it made me feel this way. And you know, all this like, flowery wording for like the meaning behind what they did. I'm not really like that. So I didn't do well in the fine art department. I ended up like switching my major again to graphic design, and, I finished my AA in graphic design. But it's funny that you mentioned the how to draw comics the Marvel way thing, because I also came across that book as a kid, and that made me get more into comics, I think. I mean, I always read comic growing up, but that made me like really start looking at the art and really like, you know, starting to just like it a lot more. And then after that, I finished my AA. I moved out to San Francisco for a while. I was living out of my dad's garage. I was going to finish my bachelor's out there. And then I got there was a convention coming. I couldn't afford to go to San Diego Comic Con. This is like 2011, 2010. And so I instead got a ticket to go to WonderCon, because it was the only other convention that was going out there to California. And it was like a couple of months away from when I had moved out there. I basically went over the internet, put together a portfolio, was just like, hey, let me just try this comics thing out. You know, I'm kind of interested in it. I always thought that I would do comics, but like comics is a side thing, that I would just do like graphic design and logo design, and then comics would just be something like maybe I'd do one comic in my whole life or something. And then I went to WonderCon with a portfolio of pages I put together, you know, some Batman sample pages that were like crappy cross between like Bruce Timm and, you know, Mike Mignola. And then like I had some my own story I wrote and drew in there that was like sort of a crappy cross between like Ryan Otley and like Jim Lee. And, you know, I just wanted to tell these stories. And I basically, my buddy Joshua Kobe, we were in line to go get a different portfolio review. And he suggested that I go get a review from Brian Stelfreeze. I was terrified. Brian was like a walking god to me. And when I was a kid, I thought he like created Batman, you know, because he was doing all the Shadow of the Bat covers. And I assumed,
they're beautiful.
As a 10-year-old reading those, you know, that like the guy doing the covers was the guy doing everything. And, like,
yeah. So, it always seemed like that, yeah.
Yeah. So like no one explained to me, you know, when I went in the comic shop that that wasn't the deal. I just assumed that that was the dude. So, So whenever I went to go get a portfolio review from Brian, he ended up having like these two other people in front of me. This one girl who was just, I thought at the time, fantastic painter, and he just like tore her to shreds in a portfolio review, and then you know, taught her color theory and all this stuff and really broke her down. And then this other guy went, I don't remember his name, it was like Steve or something like that, but he was this bald guy, and he had these like awesome Captain America pages where Captain America was like fighting these terrorists on a train or whatever, and it was like perfectly illustrated, like so much detail. I was like crazy. I was like, oh my god, this guy's stuff is incredible. And Brian proceeded to like kick his ass about that stuff, you know.
Oh, man.
Just way too focused on the art and not on the storytelling stuff. I was like, oh, he's gonna destroy me, this is game over, you know. I have Batman samples in here, this is Stelfreeze, like this is it, you know. I'm gonna end before I even start. Brian really like spent some time with me. He really broke things down for me. He showed me some fundamental things that I knew I was missing, you know, just sort of in my trying to self teach myself on the internet. He really broke that stuff down for me. And, you know, he basically just like offered to teach me and said that I should just move to Atlanta, that I should, basically screw school. Don't do that. Just move to Atlanta. He'll teach me. And that was like 6-7 years ago. And I have been drawing comics ever since then. I moved to Atlanta. I met him on a Saturday. I moved that Monday.
Oh, so, wow. Yeah.
You know,
it's one of those, it's really, I hate to interrupt, but
no, go.
You know, when people are like, I don't know, because I've told people I just need to move out there, and they're like, I can't move out there.
Yeah.
Like, okay, don't follow your dream.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, I just felt like it was one of those like crazy situations where this guy is like a legend to me, you know, and he like turned around and said that he would teach me, you know. To me, like, it's the equivalent of like Zeus coming down from Mount Olympus, you know, and saying like, hey, I want you to be Hercules, you know, like, what are you gonna say to that? You're gonna be like, no, screw you, Zeus, like, I don't want to do that.
Well, yeah, if we've learned anything from Star Wars,
like, of course, you know, you're gonna want like to learn from the master. So yeah, I just like, I took it and I ran with it. And funny enough, you know, my pops was like waiting at home with this whole like, you know, if you're going to do comics, you can't stay in this house kind of speech. So that really like lit the fire under me to go, oh, okay, well then screw that, I'm out of here. Like, no problem. But yeah, man, that's how I got started in comics. I've always sort of had this back passion to it, but then I just really fell into it and embraced it. And yeah, I just really worked hard, really practiced a lot. I think I'm a perfect example that, I don't think like art and comics is you know, a talent. I think it's like more of a trade. You can learn it. The more you practice it, it's like working out, you know.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Is there, you mentioned a bunch of different artist names there and stuff like that. Is there any particular influences that you guys have that like, you know, that really inspire you and that I don't
know. Yeah, I'm super inspired. Okay, so like my biggest thing is I want to do as much as possible with as little as I can. And it really inspires me when I see guys doing that. You look back to the classics, even guys like, you know, Kniff, or, you know, definitely one of my biggest classic influences, Alex Toth. You know, like I look at his stuff and I'm just like awed with how much he can get away with without doing anything. And it's like really a focus on the storytelling. You can tell that that's the priority, you know, sort of like those guys in that time got their work. Just, they weren't looking to be amazing artists. They were looking to tell these stories effectively. So they would raise their art to the level that they could communicate effectively. And then they would just focus on telling the story. And that's like really, really interesting to me. And then so like, and even more modern guys, you know, like Mignola and guys like Rob Haynes, you know, like Corey Walker and stuff, like these guys that like just can really show me the world in a simplified view just always blow my mind, you know. I'm always just like, I can see everything and there's absolutely nothing on this page.
Yeah, there's a certain amount of elegance to their work. It's like they're like the perfect artistic martial artists, you know. It's like, they don't need all these lines like a bird nest, you know. It's
right.
Like, you got to have all these little lines to hold it together, you know. Structurally it's unsound,
right?
But these guys, their structure, they know, so they can just focus on the story, which is, you know, that's king.
Yeah. And I think like it's also like stylistically, when you go simple, you know, it's one of those things like you're saying, like the bird's nest thing, when you're being really complicated and highly detailed, like, you know, Jim Lee, he throws down on a drawing, he throws down like, you know, 1500 lines on that drawing. And I mean, yeah, if he screws up like 200 of those lines, he's still got like 1300 of them. Yeah. You know, like the guys like Walker and like Haynes and those and Mignola, it's like they draw things with like 10 lines. So if they mess one of those lines up, 10% of their drawing is messed up.
Yeah.
So there is that like balance and that grace like you're talking about. And I like the idea, the analogy of it being like a martial art, because those guys who use simplicity, it's almost like a Wang Chung, where they're like using your imagination in tune with what they're doing, you know, to push you to where they want you to go. Like they're using your own momentum against you. And it's always intriguing to see that stuff.
Yeah, it's like judo, like stories. I love comics because it's all about, I don't want to say manipulation in a bad way.
But
you know, I hated regular art school because it was all about the what do you think, and oh, we'll create. You you no longer the, you know, the create, like when you give it away, your meaning is no longer there. I'm like, that's bullcrap. And I was like, I hate like experimental animation. I'm like, well, animation's either right or it's wrong. You know, seeing bad animation, like with comics, it's like, if I want someone to feel sad, I either succeed or fail in that. And if they are like, what is that, a dog or a mailbox? I'm like, what? Neither. It's that went off the side of a bridge. I messed up, you know?
Well, no, like, and that's exactly it, man. I mean, like, I think there's no better feeling when I draw comics. And, you know, for lack of a better way of saying it, making the reader my bitch, you know, like, when I can get that reader to like feel what I want them to feel. And this is also why I wasn't very successful as like a fine artist, because I didn't care about how I felt. My thing was like getting the audience to feel, you know, like how, and that's how I feel as a storyteller, is that like how I feel at the moment doesn't matter. What's important is the story and getting the emotion across to the reader. Like what the reader feels and how the reader sees everything is more important than how I feel as an artist. When the story is at stake, you know, I got to make sure that I walk away. And that's exactly it, is like when someone comes up to me and they talk about like something that I've done and we just discuss the story and the characters and they don't say anything about the art, I know I've like got that person, you know, because they just paid attention to the story and not the, like, I got out of my own way enough that they could enjoy what was going on.
Yeah, that's interesting that you say that too, because I find that in like some comics too, it's like, you know, the perfect mesh between like the story and the art. Sometimes like if you have that art where it's too complex, you know, you spend some time looking at it trying to figure out what's happening on that page.
Yeah.
You know, and it's it
takes you out of the story.
Exactly. Thank you. Yep.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I feel too, because you know, there are amazing art. Like, I mean, you know, a common example is Travis Charest. Charest is a phenomenal artist. Like, he might be the best artist to ever touch a comic book. Like, as far as like technical ability and skill, it is incredible the stuff he puts down. And I've read everything that Travis Charest has ever worked on, but I can't tell you what any of those stories are about. All I can remember is the art, you know, he's such a good artist that I feel like when he does something, it's so amazing that I'm walking through an art gallery and I'm not reading a story, you know. It's like, it's one of those things, like I'm not knocking that, you know, that's totally like, I enjoy that as an artist, but as a reader and a storyteller, that's taking something away from that, you know. It's sort of like, it's so good that I can't even look at the story, you know what I mean? Like, it's just going to see an awesome Michael Bay film. That, yeah, the story's not so fucking awesome.
Yeah, but look at that explosion.
You're like at the edge of your seat the whole time, and before you realize that you had fun watching 2 hours of absolutely nothing.
Fireworks. Yeah.
Right. And again, there's nothing wrong with that. Like, I totally enjoy that. But that's just not where I'm at as a storyteller, where I prefer to be. So I'm trying to go for more, you know, guys like, and the other side of that spectrum is Frank Miller. You know, Frank Miller is the worst artist in comics. His art is terrible, you know what I mean, aesthetically speaking. But
storyteller.
Oh, he's a
great story. Yeah.
You can't pick up a Frank Miller book without opening it up and going, ugh, what is that? And then turning another page and another page and another, and before you realize it, you spent the last 30 minutes reading this and you've been engulfed in it, and you now remember all of the events. You know, like, I can't tell you what the art of any specific Frank Miller panel has ever been, but I can tell you all the stories that he's worked on. I can tell you all of the events and all the things that happened to the characters, because he considers story first, you know? And that's like, that's more of where I'm trying to be, you know? Like, I would rather be more in that like storyteller realm to give me some room of play, you know?
Yeah, I never thought about that about Frank Miller before, but I think you're absolutely right.
I remember picking up Dark Knight for the first time and being like, this is the seminal work of the 80s. This is and then you read it and then you're like, yep, that's it.
I understand that. Yeah.
I picked up Dark Knight at I picked it up at my comic shop, but I also picked up the the first edition trade paperback at like one of these school book fairs, and I'm like, you know, there's a smiley face stamped in it, you know, when I bought it on the way. Got off one of the cafeteria tables and I was like, oh, cool, Batman book. And I was like, oh, I already have these ones when I got home. And I was like, man, one, they shouldn't be selling that at an elementary school.
Right.
Yeah. It was a different time.
Well, they didn't know it. They were like, oh, it's Batman. It's probably okay. But, I always referred to it as Ugly Batman. You know, I was like, man, I love Ugly Batman.
Yeah.
Like this old thick guy that rides a horse. I was like,
that's awesome. But the thing is those ugly aesthetics matched the ugliness of the story he was telling.
Yeah, that's true.
And that is the engulfing part, you know, like he's stepping out of his own way. If that book would have been drawn by a Charest, by an Adam Hughes, like that book would have been too gorgeous.
For that story,
dark and evil and dark and like scary as it was, you know, so like it's part of the storytelling, man. I mean, like these guys, you know, South Park is another great example. South Park, again, is the ugliest animation on TV possibly ever. It's crap, especially when it started out. Yeah, but the crappiness of that animation added to the comedy. Imagine if South Park would have been drawn hyper-realistically. People would have watched that first episode with the satellite coming out of Cartman's butt and been like, yo, no.
Yeah, no thank you.
So...
one of the things that we figure you guys might want to talk about a little bit about this is the Just Comics group.
Sure.
Yeah.
We're making comics, Just Comics right now.
Yeah.
So Just Comics, we're just kind of an independent collective. We're like a co-op of different creators that, want to just kind of offer support to each other and promote good things. You know, Hoyt right now is doing a story with Trey Walker and Micah. What's his last name? Is it Myers?
Micah Myers. Yep.
Isn't he Austin Powers?
That's Michael Myers.
Oh, okay.
So closely there.
All right, they got Wayne doing the lettering.
Yeah.
But they're doing a great story called Last Stop. And, you know, anyone that's listening, you should go to justcomicsgroup.com. You can
check out that.
/last stop or click on comics and click on the link and read it. I'm mesmerized by the story. Great storytelling is really good. It's just fun. You know,
yeah, we're trying to do something a little different, you know, just all around on the Just Comics stuff, you know, including what Sam's doing with the Commander Kaiju stuff as well, which I strongly recommend anybody going to check out if you like monsters, robots, you know, just awesome stuff.
Who doesn't love monsters and robots?
Right. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's at justcomicsgroup.com / Commander Kaiju with a K. But that is also a fantastic book, and you know, we're trying to do something a little different. We're trying to we want to do something for ourselves that also gives back to the people that are supporting us. So you know, this is one of those ways that we can do that we can give stories away for free for absolutely nothing. We ask nothing of the people that are coming to support us and check it out, you know, like just read it, that's it, you know. We run Patreons, you know, if people are interested in backing us up on that stuff, that's all up to you guys, you know, but we want to do this stuff for free. And then in the end, whenever we run a Kickstarter to fund a print version of what we're doing, we'd like to kick back a percentage of that stuff to a cause. Something that, like, you know, it typically is going to relate to the story that we're talking about, but might just be a cause that the creator themselves are passionate about helping out. You know, Sam's going to be doing some stuff for St. Jude's.
I don't want
to spoil any stuff about his story yet, but it does have to do with kids. So, you know, that in a way reflects what he's talking about in the story. If you guys have or haven't read Last Stop yet, you know, the second update you find out that the main character, Lincoln, Unstoppable, he is dying of cancer. So, you know, when I run the Kickstarter for that, I'll be donating the proceeds to the American Cancer Association.
Nice. Yeah. So,
yeah. We're just trying to do something to give back because also, you know, the way things are currently looking around, you know, we're thinking that people might need some help in the future.
Yeah.
What?
What can we do as artists? We're not on the forefront fighting any wars. We're not building houses. We're song and dance men, as what we do, and women. You know, what we can do is entertain people, and if people want to support us, we can make the world a better place by being actively engaged in a good cause, whatever that cause may be, and let people know, hey, when you help me, you're helping these people too. Because the world can be a really depressing place. So, you know, escape with us and, help us make the world a better place.
Nice. Yeah. I wanted to kind of go back to Mazinger Z that you talked about. If you don't mind, just because we were kind of talking a little bit about, like, because a lot of that stuff is kind of connected to the Shogun Warrior toy line that they used to have, right? Yeah. So that, as a kid, it's funny. Right before we started,
we literally were just talking about Shogun Warrior.
Yeah, and that's why when you were mentioning, I was like, oh, it's hilarious. I got to bring that up.
I'm gonna click the camera and I'm gonna hold up a couple things really quickly.
Sweet.
Got some little desk buddies. Am I on? All right, so we're gonna.
Oh yes.
and then of course, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure your first big robot would be Tetsujin 28, you know, controlled by little boy Gigantor. Your first robot that's actually piloted by someone would be Mazinger. But your first modular robot piloted by different people and controlled transforms a big guy would be Getter One, who is like my favorite, his awesome tomahawks.
Yeah.
What is he, a genie? Look at those big fat legs. He was a husky robot.
big calves.
I love big robots.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That are like the cylindrical, fun to draw ones.
Yeah.
Angles, unless they're cool wings, then I'll draw something.
Because we were talking about how awesome those toys were because they were gigantic robots, you know, and you don't get things like that today, it seems like.
So they did just release a couple months ago the 40th anniversary edition Shokugan Getter One with the big fist that rocked. Man, I remember seeing it. So I grew up in Virginia Beach, and they have this place called Mount Trashmore, which is a recreational area / landfill. They put a bunch of dirt on it and stuck some pipes on the top so it'll, like, let the gas out. And they're like, oh, look, torches. And they put it around the lake, but we would go there and run up and down the Mount Trashmore. And man, I saw this guy and he had the big old, you know, Mazinger. And I was like, I want that. never got it. So anyone that's listening, if you want to send me one, you can. We'll be best friends.
There you go. Well,
No, I was just going to say I always wanted to fly that plier. Oh. pilot me a big robot.
There you go. That'd be awesome.
I'd trip.
Yes. I would try to break dance.
Break dance. Wow, that would be impressive, though.
That would be really impressive in a robot.
Yeah, especially one that has wings. I don't know how that would work out.
I know myself well enough that I'd probably just get it and be like, yeah, all right, cool, and try to run and just like Sam said, just fall flat on my face, just trip and boom. Yeah.
Well, you guys have done a lot of different work and stuff like that. Is there like a one piece of work or one thing that you've done that you're most proud of at this point in your career? Or more than one? I don't know.
Yeah, you know, I think that's a weird question for me, because like I'm one of those guys that whatever I'm working on is like to me the awesomest thing I've ever done. Until it leaves my desk, then it's like the thing I hate the most. And yeah, the next thing I'm working on is the awesomest thing I've ever done. Yeah. So, you know, I have to say, I mean, right now it's going to be Last Out. You know, I think like as far as with the stuff we're doing, Just Comics, I'm really proud of that stuff because, you know, we're trying to do something just us independently. You know, we saw a need that we needed to address within the things that we were doing with publishers and all that stuff. Not to say that we're not going to keep doing publisher work. Like, I'm still going to do that. I'm working on a book with Doug Wagner over at 12 Gauge. That'll be out later this year, early next year. But, you know, there was just this thing that we've been working for so many different publishers for so long. We decided we wanted to do something that would be us, you know, that like we could just fly and do what we wanted to do without restriction, and, you know, talk directly to the audience. And, you know, this has really given us that opportunity to do so. So I'm really excited about it. You
know? Yeah. You know, the way I'm looking at Commander Kaiju is if I play my cards right, I call it this could be my Stan Sakai moment. Like, you know, or it could be the thing that I work on for the rest of my life and be happy doing it. Mm. If I am true to the story, if I'm true to the art, and I try to entertain myself and the readers, I think I could enjoy drawing big robots and monsters and people in dire situation forever and be all right with that, you know? So I'm like really, and I'm going to get really corny on you guys. Ready? This is one of my life philosophy things, like most proud of things. So like I'm a dad and stuff, you know? So, you know, that was a, let's see, what would you call that? A mixed media collaborative piece. But, you know,
we're all dads.
We're all three dads. Yeah, yeah. So we understand. Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I always live by this saying, which is that no other success in life can compensate for failure within the walls of your own home. So, like, I mean, I work at home, you know, homeschool the kids. You know, I see them all the time. That I have very little that I actually want in life. And since I've been working on just my book at home, like I've been losing weight, I'm happier. I'm like, I get to focus on them, and it's like to me, like I'm like, oh, okay, that's where I get the most happiness and pleasure from. That's what I'm gonna focus on. So that's, you know, starting to get a little corny on you guys, but
no, that's fine. Man, that's,
we're talking comics.
Yeah. Well, you had a Kickstarter project that your kid just had, correct?
Yeah.
That was pretty successful, wasn't it? I thought
that little punk. no, he has a. There should be a comic that'll be showing up on Just Comics Group at some point by him and my wife, and occasionally guested by me. For their little story, Cavi Capers, which is a comic strip about magical guinea pigs. But
who's the best kind of guinea pigs?
Not just regular guinea pigs.
Yeah, magical.
He wanted to do plush toys and was like, hey, can we do these? You go to a lot of conventions. I want to try that too. I said, okay, yeah. We can do that, but you know, you can't just do the plush things. You got to be putting your comic out. And, you know, it's got to be more than just a toy. Said, you know, he's like, yeah, I can do that. So I've been fighting China for the last couple months. Oh my goodness. It's things I've learned that I didn't ever want to learn about. Last thing we had, they were stuck in Shenzhen customs. out there were like, oh, these are Totoros. And I'm like, they look nothing like Totoro. Totoro has legs and arms. These guys don't have legs or arms. Totoro has a snout. It doesn't have a snout. Totoro has a tail. Stubby, that may be, still has a tail. They don't have tails. Totoro has sharp ears. These have round ears. They're different colors than Totoro. I'm like, who makes these rules?
Wow. Wow. Yeah.
Like, hey, if you want us to release them, you're going to have to get a letter from Studio Ghibli. Well, they said, you know, ultimately it came down to that, but it was like, we didn't get a letter. We just found a different shipping person that knew they were related to, they had someone they were related to in customs. So they were able to push things through. It's like,
wow.
They were just trying to bilk us for money.
That's crazy.
That's nuts.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
to touch back on like the stuff that Sam was saying earlier with his kid wanting to do the Cavi Capers comic and all that stuff, like that's what I find so exciting about the Just Comics thing, because we're doing it ourselves, we can be flexible, you know. Like Sam was saying that he could do Commander Kaiju forever, like that's awesome. I think that there's like total props in that, you know. Like I'm not the guy that could do a story forever, you know. So Trey and I, we have like a bunch of different stories with different characters and different places and settings and all stuff set up. So if this platform affords us the ability to basically put one of our stories out sort of every year or so, we're super excited about that, you know. And like it allows us the format where like if Sam's kid has a comic about Cavi Capers and he wants to get on there and tell his story and he's gonna be, you know, he's gonna get in and do that, we can allow the space for that, you know. Like we're there to like support each other and help spread the word about what each one's doing. So
yeah, the end game, it just, you know, anyone that's listening, because I've been getting a lot of emails, I know that Hoyt's been getting a lot of messages. A lot of people are asking how can they join up with Just Comics. And the thing that we want to do at first is, one, focus on what we're doing now before we start taking submissions and helping other people. We want to make sure that the model that we've set up works.
Let's be totally transparent right here. We have no idea if this is going to work the whole way through.
Gotcha. We don't want to overpromise or give anyone false hopes. I know a lot of people have at some point in their life made a deal and thought, hey, this is going to be great, and then been like, oh, this is poopy. Someone put poop in my soup.
We've all been married.
So you know the three rings of marriage, right? I am going to get in trouble for this. Okay. There's the engagement ring.
Yes.
There's the wedding ring.
We're all tensely waiting.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, there's the suffering. No,
I get punched by my wife a lot, so it's okay. No,
Buddha says that all of life is suffering, and to suffer is just to experience. So that's, you know. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, how did you guys end up getting together for the Just Comics group? Just you guys?
Were we in North Carolina Comic Con?
New York.
Was it New York?
New York was the first time I think we sat down and actually like talked. Before that, we had like seen each other at conventions and just said, hey, in passing.
So in New York, we roomed together.
Yeah. We were both working for a company and, you know, they stuck us in a room together basically. And so, you know, we were forced to hang out the whole weekend when we weren't at the convention.
Kind of like college.
Yeah. Long at all. We had nothing in common. We got along great.
And you know, it's Sam's an awesome guy. I mean, guys obviously know his like work, not just as like an artist, you know, because he's done, you know, awesome things with Archer and Adventure Time and all these cool properties, and it's amazing. You know, I'm stunned whenever I look at his stuff. I'm just like, wow, that's just so cool. But you know, at the same time, Sam is also like an awesome dude. You know, and he saw my frustration with things that were happening, and you know, he had some frustrating things going on in his career at the time, and so we kind of just, it was one of those things, that started there, But then I think, you know, once we got together sort of at NC Comic Con, and then it wasn't until January, I think, of this past year that I was getting out of Heroes Mini Con, and I got a call from Sam, and Sam was just basically like, hey, man, what do you think about this? You know, and he just pitched me the loose structure of what, you know, would end up becoming Just Comics. And, you know, I was like, dude, let's do that. You know, I have been talking about for years with Stelfreeze, my studio mate, you know, and our interns and sort of other stream mates I have about doing something like this. And, you know, just things hadn't lined up. You know, most recently Stelfreeze was doing Black Panther stuff and all that. So things just never like aligned themselves properly for us to get together and do something. And it just so happened that when Sam approached me about it, I was just in that space of like, yeah, I want to do something. You know, and so it just ended up working out. It was really like perfect timing, to be honest. Silence the room.
We met Sam at a convention as well. He was just super nice. Just one of the nicest creators I've met at any convention I've been to. So.
Hey, I got my image to uphold. You can't say that I'm a nice guy.
Oh, but, man. So mean. He actually hit me. It was terrible. So just speaking of conventions real quick, what's like the craziest thing you've seen at a convention? Because I'm sure you guys do a ton of them.
Ooh. All right. So my favorite thing to do of any convention, all right, if you want to talk about crazy stuff,
okay,
is obviously this has to involve DragonCon, right? I mean, like, let's just go ahead and put that on the table. This has to involve DragonCon, right? Trey, the writer for Last Stop, annually, we comb the Craigslist ads for DragonCon every year, and it is possibly some of the most hilarious stuff you've ever read or heard about, like what these people want to do, or just like, and it's some of the weirdest stuff. Like, maybe it was the year before, we came across the alien. The Xenomorph and Predator orgy ad.
Oh, wow. Man.
Had the hotel number, the hotel room at the Marriott and everything in the ad, and said you would only be let in the room for the orgy if you were in full Predator or Xenomorph regalia.
Like, wow.
I was like, whoa.
Talk about face grabbers.
Well, you know, it's just like, how many people can really show up to that party? Like, is there really a Xenomorph
it's a very exclusive party.
Right. So it just, and that's just like the icing on the cake.
I'm going to have a new hobby.
I know, right? I mean,
looking up on Craigslist, not dressing like a Xenomorph.
Right.
I swear.
That would be a great podcast just to like read the ads. Because
right. That would.
Yeah. We're going to have to jot that down.
And just know every Memorial Day weekend there's a
list
of ads.
That's hilarious. I guess the follow up with that question. What's the craziest commission that you guys have ever been asked to draw?
I drew someone's dog. I mean, it wasn't really crazy.
Well, I mean, it could be. I guess it depends on the dog.
I was like, yeah, I draw your dog, I guess. Well, that would be swell. And I was like, okay. I'll tell you the most fun one I had is this guy was like, we draw a Finn doing taxes. And I was like, so I drew Finn from Adventure Time leaning over a table working on different paperwork, and he had all his receipts next to him. And I had so much fun working on it. The guy was like, well, how much are you? I said, whatever you want to pay, man. I said, that was fun.
That's awesome.
Yeah, gave me $100. I was like, what? Whenever I do Adventure Time stuff and like people pay me for it, I almost feel bad taking their money because I'm like, I almost feel bad taking their money. But I'm like, you know, you could probably draw this too. It takes minimal effort. That was a weird commission to be asked, like doing taxes. Okay.
I'm guessing they were an accountant, maybe? I don't
know. Oh, man, he was this 18-year-old kid.
Oh, what? Okay, throw that out.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. Weirdest commission. I've drawn dogs. I've drawn cats. Man, I don't know. Let me ask my fiance here. Lisa, weirdest commission? Yeah, I don't know. There's got to be something. I just can't think of it off the top of my head here. I want to think of it when it's not relevant, obviously.
Yeah. Well, you guys probably do so much, too. I'm sure that it probably all blends together. I was just thinking there might have been that one that just stuck out.
We draw a lot of weird stuff, so, like, weird becomes the norm, you know? It's like...
Yeah. I can see that.
To me, taxes are weird. I'm like, man, these aren't monsters and robots.
Yeah, that's true.
It depends. They are the IRS.
I definitely had a creeped out moment once when I did the this guy. He came around. I don't remember what convention this was, but came around and he got commissions. And I don't want to say what character, because if I do, the guy's gonna know, or who you other people are gonna
sure,
know.
Yeah.
He just got it. He came around. He got the same character commissioned by basically like everybody in the room. Right, just came down the aisle and just was like, "Will you do this character? Will you do this character?" And it was the same character for sort of everybody. Right.
Oh wow.
And I had a commission. I already had done a pre-con piece of this, like just as a warm up of the same character, and he sort of saw that. You know, and he was like, "Oh yeah, I see you can do this. Can you do one for me?" And I was like, "Well, you know, that one's for sale. You can buy that one if you want it. You know, I mean, I'll do another one, but that one's already done." And he was like, no, yeah, I just want my own or whatever. Like, all right, cool. You know, and the guy was a little weird. You know, but a little weird is normal at a comic book convention.
Yeah.
You know, we're all a little weird. So yeah, I just brushed off. I was all good. Whatever. But I could already tell that he liked sort of the sexiness of the character. So I was like, all right, well, let's go for something like that. You know, let's please the man. And so, you know, I did this like sexier pose with the character and all this stuff. And he came back around later on. And when he came back around, nice, I was like, oh, here you go. You know, and he gave me the creepiest, yeah. Bro, no. You know, like I was like, he was satisfied. He was happy.
I'm sure he was. And later that night, he was probably satisfied again.
Where someone asked me to draw a character from a show I worked on as Harley Quinn, but they wanted it in the Bruce Timm costume, but done more in the Bruce Timm style than the show style that I worked on. And I said, okay, so you want me to just draw Harley Quinn then? No, I want so-and-so. And I was like, okay, but, you know, no one's going to know. And he goes, I'll know. I was like, all right.
That's hilarious.
That is. Oh, man.
Speaking on like some past things that you guys worked on, I guess we'll start over. We'll kind of jump back and forth a little bit between you. Sam, can you tell us a little bit about Frisky Dingo?
Frisky Dingo.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Great job. I love working with those guys at 7030. You know, Frisky Dingo, created by Adam Reed and Matt Thompson, and working with guys like Christian Danley, Casey Phillips, Eric Sims and Mac Williams, Neil Holman and Dave Caicedo, and Chad Hurd. Did I miss anyone? Let's see. Christian Danley, Casey Willis. Yeah, there are only a couple of us. I feel really bad if I miss anyone. They'll listen, they'll be like, jerk. But you know, that was such a fun show because, I mean, I've got ADD, and every episode I could work on something else. I'd work on characters, or I'd draw backgrounds, or I, you know, when you, a show like Frisky Dingo and Archer and stuff, you, as an illustrator and a designer, you design digital puppets. So we would draw the parts. The animators would actually put into the animation program that they use at the time, we're using After Effects. But we'd draw them in Illustrator, and we would make little test animations that would show the animators how to use the puppets. But, like, it was just a fun show. And we were in a little house in Atlanta, East Atlanta, and we lived across the street from the actual Mr. Ford, who voiced his own character in the show. And lawns for $40. And he carried an airsoft pistol in his butt crack. Yeah, you doing, man? Good to see you today. Hey, how's it going, Mr. Ford? He's like, oh, pretty good. No, but man, needs a lawnmower, $40. I was like, you can ask him. You know, they'd bought a foreclosed house, and it was just in a neighborhood. And, you know, every day, these six guys would show up, and they would go in, and people had ideas and theories on what we were doing there, and thought we were shooting weird movies, you know, with a bunch of guys in the house. every once in a while, they make you answer the door with a sheet and be like, oh, hey, how's it going? No, we're busy making movie magic in here. One time someone stopped me. They found out what we did. They handed me a script. And I was like, hey, for legal reasons, I can't take this. You know, like, what if they're making this already at Adult Swim? Like, I mean, they could actually be making Dog Apartment right now. It's a dog. you know, I don't have time to... I had time, but I could not hand drive on the freeway there in Atlanta. man, that was the best. I love those guys. Working with them was just a joy, and you know, it was fun to be touching almost every aspect of creating a show and doing it in such a quick turnaround time. So, yeah.
Nice.
But it was fun. Yeah. It was fun.
Yeah. That is a fun show.
Yeah. It's on Hulu if you want to go watch it, or adultswim.com. That, the Xticles. Good. Oh, yeah. I was able to help Mr. Ford say Xticle because he couldn't pronounce it. Oh. I was like, say Xticle. And I was like, say X. And he was like, X. And then I was like, say tickle. Like, tickle me Elmo. And he was like, X tickle. And I was like, there you go. Because it was like SSX. I was like, hey, I don't know what you're saying, but SSX is not extical.
Yeah, because you voiced one of the characters on Frisky Dingo too, right? And same thing on Archer.
Roy the limo driver.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right. His pants.
Nice.
Penguins. Penguins. Ah, yes.
All right. Hey, Hoyt.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about Drink Champs, the webcomic?
Yeah. Dude, Drink Champs is probably the best comic gig I've ever had, honestly. That was Drink Champs, if people who aren't familiar about it, is a podcast. It is the number one podcast in the world right now. They get millions of listeners every week.
Wow.
Man.
And yeah, they.
At least until we drop this one.
they basically, it's Noriega from Conan Noriega, N-O-R-E, and DJ EFN. And they basically got together, and what they do is they interview hip hop legends. And they are hip hop legends in their own right, to be perfectly honest. But they interview hip hop legends, they get drunk and high with these guys, and then they just share like crazy stories. And my job every week is just to take one of the stories that they've shared and turn that into a quick little webcomic. Nice. And that is like just so much fun because they just share the wildest stuff. And I've always been a fan of hip hop. I got like hooked up with them via Twitter. You know, basically I was listening to the podcast when it first started. I grew up in Queens, not far from where Noriega's from. He was one of those guys that like I sort of looked up to as just like, hey, that's how you make it out of here. You know, this is not a great situation. I actually originally wanted to do hip hop for a portion of my life. I wanted to be a rapper.
Okay.
And then fell into sort of the comics thing and realized I liked more storytelling than I liked the rapping thing. And that's what I really enjoyed about hip hop and just everything in my life. So, that like sort of took a back seat. But once they started hearing them do the show, I was like, man, these stories are like so hilarious. You know, I would love to do this like little comic show, like Sunday funnies of this stuff. Hazardous Sounds, their engineer, liked what was going on. So, I just did one just to do one, just to show them like, hey, you know, like this is what I want to do with it. And then when I did it, Haz and EFN contacted me and, we just got the ball rolling on it. I ended up flying down there for the Havoc episode of Mobb Deep, like episode 17. And I got to sit in the room while they sort of like interviewed and hung out with this legend,
That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a ton of fun, man. And then, from there, I also do like, the occasional homage image for them. And what that is I just take like a record cover or an album cover of someone they're interviewing, and I turn that and put them on that cover instead of the artist. And those are a lot of fun because I get to like look at all these like awesome hip hop covers album covers that I've always enjoyed over the years, and I get to like really study them and then try to do my own rendition of them.
Nice.
I'm super humbled that they would even share the stage with me, that they would even put me on like that and share my stuff like that. I'm really humbled. Like they're awesome for doing that to be honest. And we're 42 episodes deep now in the webcomic.
Okay.
Actually today we dropped the 42nd episode. It's about, basically, on episode 44 of the podcast, or 42 of the 41 of the podcast, they had Young Jeezy on, and Young Jeezy told this, with Nori was talking to Jeezy about how Jeezy got barred entrance to the whole party thing that they had when Obama got elected, and it's because Jeezy's record didn't clear, fell in blah blah all this stuff. Mm-hmm. They didn't let him so Nori told his version of what he thought happened, and I turned that into a comic. So that was like kind of fun because I got to draw a panel of sort of Barack Obama smoking weed, which is not the truth, but totally fun to do. It's just like the way they tell things. It's cool because even though I'm the writer creator of it and I write it every week, I feel more like a scribe because they tell these awesome, hilarious stories. And my job is just to go in there and turn that into a comic, mm-hmm. And so it's just awesome to get to hear these like firsthand and hear them talk about these things and then try to take my own take on it.
That's cool. Do you get to hear it before the podcast gets dropped or
right now? Because I started late on it, I'm still playing catch up with where they are. So they're on episode 70 or 70 something. Mm-hmm. And I'm getting close to 50.
Okay.
So where, I still listen to everything as it comes out, but once I get caught up to that, because I started on 16, they were on episode 16 when I did the first one. So basically I just had to go back and catch up all the other episodes to it. So I'm just like that far behind, but I've got stuff in the chamber and we'll have some double features coming up shortly enough that will catch us right up to that.
Nice. Nice.
Who is your favorite hip hop artist? If you,
hands down, it's gotta be Nas.
Nas
to me, yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Just totally. I don't know how much you guys are into hip hop, but that guy like changed the game. So
yeah, I'm almost.
The second you said hip hop, R. Sam just immediately leaned forward and was like an inch away from the microphone.
Oh, that's what's up. That's what's up. Yeah, yeah. No, I've always been a huge fan of hip hop, and Nas to me is like, again, another Queens dude. he was to me the first, from my experience. You know, I know Rakim came before him and all that, but
oh man, that's what I'm talking about.
But in my life, you know, in my life, through my experiences, the way I saw it, he was the first that was like, you know, the street dude, but had a perspective beyond that. You know, like he was looking beyond his station.
Right.
And that to me was like incredibly inspiring as a kid, and still to this day. You know, when I look back on that stuff, I'm like, and everything that he does, you know, he's just always like moving that needle, and he's at a point where he's like making hip hop for himself.
Right.
And it's crazy to look back over his whole career and see that he does these things. And when he does them, people at first are like, oh, that's weird. And I'm not into that. And then all of a sudden that becomes the thing.
Yeah. You know? He's a great storyteller.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So yeah, and I think personally to me, hip hop is all, I think everything is about relatability, but definitely hip hop. So, you know, growing up in Queens and having a dude from Queens explain these things to me, because my pops also wasn't around from when I was 12 on. So, you know, I was like raised on like Jadakiss and Nas and Mobb Deep, you know, and all these guys, DMX and all this stuff. Like they were my father figures, you know, to a certain extent. So.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So, Sam, let's not bury leading more. I'm sure you probably get asked about this in every interview. So can we talk a little bit about season one of Archer?
Sure.
If you just talk about, obviously, it was a lot of the people probably from Frisky Dingo.
This is going to turn into the Jerry Lewis interview. Yes.
Oh, no.
Nah, Sam. Explain it.
Don't ask me a yes or no question. Ask me a find out question. Maybe like a how do you feel or a
what was it like to be there those early days? And did you think that Archer would be as big as it was when you were doing it in the first place?
Oh, that's a good question, Hoyt.
I've heard the guy answer the question a million times. So.
I'm sure.
early on, you know, we were doing Frisky Dingo, but instead of superheroes, we're doing spies. You know, it was still. Adam Reed's humor is really good, and it's, you know, kind of the same thing, you know. It's okay, well, these guys work together, their office is a ship, that's Frisky Dingo. These guys work together, their office is own office. You know, and it's hard to tell how things will play out, especially after being on a show that was canceled just before and seeing what kind of terrible lead-ins we would get on FX, and then we started getting better lead-ins, things like Spider-Man 2 or the Simpsons movie, and then it would cut over to Archer, and you know, you'd get like the million moms across America writing.
Yeah,
going, this is terrible, it needs to be, and it's like, well, hang on, I'm not going to get into morality issues. I'm just going to get into your terrible parenting issue.
There you go. Right.
What are they doing up at 10 o'clock?
Hey, 11. It was on at 11.
Yeah, right, right. I remember that.
And the parental discretion still does before each episode. There are warnings on there, and parents that are unengaged with their family, that's what's disintegrating America. The shows that are on there, it's the fact that people disengage from what goes on within the walls of their own home. So
yeah, parents that took their kids to go see Sausage Party.
It'll be great.
Yeah, right.
Sure, well. So, you know, it's like, just know what your kids are doing, but you know, I don't blame a gun manufacturer for, you know, people's deaths that are gun related. Unless there's a fault with the gun, you know, like if Bugs Bunny puts his finger in the barrel of your gun, it better not blow out the back.
Right. Stupid Acme.
I want it to blow right through Bugs Bunny's hand and arm. That's Blue Babbit. But no, it was fun. Like the first episode, you know, it was the same crew. Essentially, there were a couple fewer people on there, and we took just a little bit longer to do the first episode of Archer. And then we found a facility to work in. We were moving out of the house. We got into an actual animation studio that had the right amount of equipment, because when you're starting a thing, you know, people will go, well, what's the budget for a show? And I'm not going to say what it is, because it's, you know, they can find out by Googling it. Mm-hmm. But like, they go, oh man, that's a lot of money. And it's like, well, you have to pay all your voice actors. You have to pay all your animators and illustrators. And, you know, you have to pay rent for the place, and you have to pay your electric bill, and you got to buy all those fancy schmancy computers, and not just the computers, but the software, because you need full legal versions of that. Not everyone's using the same software for all the different departments. Can't have everyone there at the same time. If you do, you're going to have parking issues. You're going to have people that aren't working because there is no work created for them yet. Mm-hmm. You know, you're making Gantt charts to figure out when people are coming in. So, like, you know, being part of that is always fun for me. I mean, I help produce stuff, and I like the business. I like creating the most. But early on, when I was still doing school stuff, I was talking to, I don't know if you guys have got an interview, Kazu, who does Flight Amulet and stuff, but he'd come to a school that I was at, and was talking to him because I was just in awe on how well he did the Flight anthologies and his Bulk City website, and you know, he was telling me about all the business aspects that he had to do and the different hats he had to wear. And I was like, yeah, I'd like to get good at that stuff, too. And he's like, man, I hate it. And I'm like, well, you know, I don't know. It sounds pretty cool being able to know that stuff. But, you know, as I've gone, I've done all the admin stuff. I'm like, man, I hate that stuff. I just want to get in and get dirty and work on the things. So, you know, on the early days, like the very first episode, again, it was wearing a bunch of hats. It was designing characters along with Chad Hurd and doing, like I helped develop the style of the cars. You know, how did we get cars? Well, we didn't really have a 3D modeler on hand. So I used handy dandy SketchUp, and I'd go to a 3D warehouse online, grab SketchUp models that the community had made, you know, that were free to use. And then I'd bring them into Photoshop and I would redraw them. And, you know, that became part of, you know, the visual style of that world. And it was good because you'd find the correct models that were right for the time period. And it's like, oh, sweet, you know. And then,
helps you handle perspective, and you know, you can
do a little
breakthrough with your camera and all that stuff too. I mean, SketchUp is amazing.
Yeah, so you know, and that's a really quick going back to something that Quaid said early on. You know, we have tools like SketchUp now, and when you think about our job, whether it's cartoons or comics, our job is to tell a story. So we shouldn't have to get all worried about the perspective, you know, if that's not our main focus.
We just need to make the thing
and put it in perspective so it doesn't pull people out of the story.
Absolutely. I mean, it's I akin it to, you know, sort of if a plumber shows up to your house and he shows up with like a power wrench, you're not going to be like, hey man, no, you got to pull out that wrench and I want to see you wrench this, like, you know, I want to see you break your back. Like, you're not going to tell the guy that. You know, he showed up to do a job, he's got a tool that's going to help him. Like, there's no real problem with that as long as it focuses the story. And that goes straight hand in hand because you need the tools, the specific right tools for the job in your toolbox. You know, for example, like Mike Mignola doesn't like to draw feet. and doesn't use perspective. Mike Mignola is doing a stage play whenever he does comics. That's how he sets up his backgrounds. That's how he sets up his characters and his and all of his like stuff and his storytelling. Stage plays don't have perspective. They have false perspective. They're there just to give you enough that you feel like something's going on. And that's the same thing that Mike Mignola is doing with his. So he actually doesn't need perspective, and perspective would get in the way of what he does.
Yeah.
It would take you out of that moment. So yeah. It's just that. It's a tool to be used if you need it in the story you're telling.
Yeah, you'll see the percent of me in an arch and everything under. You know, it's like, I like to walk around conventions and go up to artists and go, did you make that pencil? I'm like, yeah. Oh, did you manufacture that Copic marker? Get out of here.
it's a quote Steve Houston who was giving a talk. You know, he's a famous painter, and he was giving a talk. And he showed this painting where he, he light boxed the Jack Daniels bottle that was in the painting. You know, he was like, yeah, I'm painting the bottle. I don't need to blow the glass and brew the alcohol in order to paint the bottle. I just need to paint the bottle, you know, like that's it. So it's whatever your objective is and whatever gets you there. And that's really what's important. You know?
So it's a fun little tool. You know, I happen to draw the daggone cars by ourselves each time. Just place the car, then draw the car. But use that reference. Man, you know, I'll tell you, I know I'm veering off. We'll land this plane. We're taking this
That's all we're doing.
Yeah, we're good.
We're used to doing this when we're...
it's the journey, not the destination,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, there you go. Like, you know, when I was a kid, I thought, oh, man, I draw stuff straight out of my imagination. You know, but... And I was like, oh, if you use some reference, you're cheating. And young artists go, oh, no, I drew that. I didn't look at anything. It's like, hey, guess what? It's okay to have looked at something because you're not blind. If you are, man, he'd really be good. But it's okay because we have been informed our whole lives. And some of us pay more attention to certain things in aspects in life than other situations and aspects. I just happen to look at forms and shapes and lines and other elements of design and put that together for my art. You know, other people can read the same way that, like I've got a brother, John, like when I walk outside, if I'm going to cross the street, I can look left and right and get a sense of what's out there so I don't get hit by a car. My brother can open up a book and just glance left and right, and he sees all the words and how they're arranged, and he knows what the page says. I'm like, you know, I can read fast, but I can't read like that. And I'm like, how do I crack into that, you know? And I just, you know, I'm amazed at those kinds of powers that people have. But it's, you know, it's just what they... put themselves into. So I don't know where I crashed the plane, guys. We're dead.
Destination to land. So that's all about like what we want, what we like about all that stuff, and you using SketchUp for Archer, and how you define the style. But was there a moment that you like realized that Archer was going to be as big as it was, or did you not know ever that it was going to like be?
It's funny to see like pictures I've drawn on countless t-shirts and posters and billboards and, you know, tattoos. And I'm like, oh, why would you do that to yourself? Draw it very well. You know, like, why wouldn't you get this tattoo instead? I'm always taken back and amazed at how much people like it, and it's really flattering, you know, that people seem to enjoy it. Sorry, people keep messaging me, hey, I just got back from C2E2. How was CreatorCon? It was all right. I mean, it was all right. I don't know, man.
So you're saying there wasn't ever like a moment that you thought that you were like, wow, this thing is getting huge, or
no?
That might be the most popular thing you've ever worked on, right? I mean, as far as just
probably, I don't know,
notoriety, right? I don't know. I don't know how you classify that, or if you even quantify it at all. I mean, it's
know me for that, but like, I'm not really one to get starstruck or like think about fame in that kind of way. So like, I mean, you know, except for when I when I first met Brian, man, you know, I was like, he was doing everything right. He painted the coolest Boba Fett helmet I'd ever seen. It's kind of slanted. He'd worked in some Star Wars cards, and this Princess Leia head that they had put in the 30th, was it the 30th anniversary set, or 20th anniversary set? It was a while back. I'm getting old. But I, you know, when I first met him, it was just like, oh man. Because I, again, the Shadow of the Bat stuff, and you know, I knew that he was, for me, he was a bookseller, because I was a completist that wanted to have certain things, and it was like all of his stuff. And I'd always open up a book and be disappointed, and he didn't do the inside. So, yeah, it's just, you know, as far as like the Archer stuff goes, it's like, you know, it's cool. People, you know, seldom recognize me. Even if I'm at a convention and there's a poster of the character that looks like me, that was voiced by me on a show, and they're like, "That's weird. Why would you have him on the poster?" And I'm like, "I don't know." Metaphorically, he's got his pants down. You're seeing me with my pants down. It's me. Hello. I'm like, yeah, fat white guy, mustache.
Looks just like me.
It's also kind of nerdy. All right. Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah.
Thanks, Hulk.
It was fun to train a lot of people and, like, find new talent and get them in the industry. That stuff to me, like developing artists, that gets me going. Like, I like working on shows and stuff, but for me, I always divorce myself from, when I'm working for someone else, I divorce myself from the material. You know, it's fun to put in input and help make jokes and you know, tell those kind of stories, but I have to disengage a bit, because when you get messages from like the Million Moms of America, it's like, you know, you don't want someone to tell you you have an ugly kid, right, Zeke? No, I'm just. but it was fun, because like my son Zeke, you know, when we did Young Archer, anytime you see him with his head down, just like we modeled Young Archer after my son. So it's like fun to see him in the show. You know, people are like, oh, yeah, you're in the show. And I'm like, yeah, but Zeke's in the show, and he hasn't seen it, and it's hilarious. But, yeah, I mean, but as far as, like, I don't know. I don't know what to say, man. It was fun. I liked working with those guys.
And then you did you worked on Adventure Time as well, the comic, right?
Yeah, comics and some like card stuff for Cryptozoic, and like the Christmas card for Cartoon Network. And
oh, nice! Yeah,
yeah, it was. You know, I like drawing those characters. I saw this show, Bravest Warriors. I have a buddy, Nate Olson, that he's in charge of all the licensing stuff and over at Frederator, and Frederator's the company that helps produce a lot of these cartoons with Fred Seibert. And, I saw the first episode after the pilot. I had seen the pilot previously. He had shown it to me years before it was released, and years before Adventure Time, he showed me that pilot when they were pitching it at Nick. And Nick passed on it. Those fools. they I just thought Danny was hilarious with his eyebrows and his middle finger up all the time. So I drew some fan art for it, you know, and I sent it to those guys, and they're like, man, this is like some of the best fan art we've ever seen. And they're looking at it. Nate's like, wait, who did it? And they're like, Sam Olson. He's like, he's the guy who helped with Archer. And they were like, oh, well, what the heck? And Fred had put up a piece of artwork that someone did of Catbug and put a post on Tumblr. And Fred's an awesome guy that like has this open door policy. And he made the comment on Tumblr, man, wouldn't it be awesome if we did some Catbug books? You know, so I wrote a comment on there and said, I'd love to draw them. So he was like, okay. You know, and they got me in contact with the guys over there at Frederator Books, and I started drawing Catbug books. And then as I was doing that, I was talking to some of the guys there, and I really wanted to work on Adventure Time, so I just started drawing and writing the story without soliciting it, just put it together, and was like, hey, I have this idea. Is there any way that I could, you know, maybe get a cover or something over there? Boom. They were like, yeah, we can pull some strings. And when they gave me the contact info, I already had a story ready to go. You know, I mean, it had like two edits. There were two panels that needed to be changed because I had like, maybe I'll send you guys the artwork. Limit Grab, he's having this existential crisis.
I love Lemon Grab.
Change his face. He's not happy with the person he sees. So he, at one point, grabs cinnamon buns. And I had him take cinnamon bun. He grabbed them by the butt cheeks and just stuck them on his face. Oh, man. Back and there were two panels where he's grabbing said cheeks and sticking them on his face. And they were like, you can't do this. And I'm like, they do way more stuff in the show. Like, that stuff is only on the screen for a second. And when you have a panel, it sits there forever.
Yeah, I guess that is a little different.
It lingers.
Yeah.
So I redrew those two panels instead of them sticking them on there via cheeks, standing cheek to cheek. It was he tied his arms back around his head and wore them like a mask. So it was in the same basic position and everything. But, you know, and it was great. There was a guy that did a review of it that said it was the creepiest one that they had ever run. I was like, it's going for yeah, there was, I don't know, man. I was sitting in one day just going to myself. Gotta do me a Lemon Grab story. So, yeah, but that was fun because I would, you know, coming, so from Archer to me, it was no big deal because I was there at the beginning and, you know, it's like I knew how the sausage was made. To me, yeah. Adventure Time was magic because they had already seduced me with fun and I wanted to be part of that fun. You know, it's, you get to these fun things and like, people that want to get into animation, I tell them that, the dirty secret is it's like getting a job at Toys R Us. You think you're going to be at Mr. Megorium's Wonder Emporium, but in fact, get to this warehouse where you're sweeping floors and stocking shelves and harassing people for their zip code and trying to get them to buy pattern. after 2 months, they go, well, thanks for helping out during Christmas. Now the little old ladies are going to continue to work and you're going to go back to your crappy life. So that's kind of like the animation world, but doing the Adventure Time stuff always felt like magic to me. It was Mr. Megorium's Wonder Emporium. So anytime I get to play with those toys, I'm like transported and just kind of giggle while I draw and you know, and stories go, I hope they get approved. And that's the way I feel with Commander Kaiju right now is, you know, I have all these sort of, I have pages that I've been thumbing out like I'm way ahead on my thumbnails. And I'm so excited to get, like, them out there. And Hoyt will tell me to get busy. He's good at that because I'm you guys are interviewing me right now. You know how difficult this is. But that's how I live my life all the time. It's like leaning back in your chair and just hoping you don't fall in your head. Yeah, that's how I feel with Commander Kaiju. I'm so excited to work on it. The magic's there. And, you know, I think it's because I'm in love with the subject matter. And, you know, I've always loved big robots, and I've always loved big monsters, and I've always loved the Sentai style superhero, you know, squad kind of thing. So, you know, there's so many little nods, even in his costume, that I have to like heroes that super inspired me, whether it was Captain Marvel or Dr. Fate. Mm. You know, Union Jack. I mean, he's not there, but he is there at the same time in spirit. Yeah, sorry.
No, that's awesome. Yeah.
No, I apologize. It was terrible.
No, it's cool. It's cool to hear what you guys are into. I think.
Yeah, that was actually going to be my next question. Is maybe start with Hoyt. Just what because this podcast tends to deal with pop culture. What elements of pop culture that are currently out are you into?
That are currently out, man. I'm always looking for the next thing, man. To be perfectly honest, I think, like, you know, we're in a space with the internet and, you know, the way things work that we can talk, like, directly to our audience, and you guys can talk directly to us. And you guys know this doing a podcast. I mean, you know, people can, like, comment directly on whatever you're doing. Mm-hmm. Joe Schmo from wherever can tell you how he feels about whatever. Yeah. And that has its positives and that has its negatives.
Usually, sometimes time, negatives. That's a seal.
Yeah.
On the internet?
Yeah. But, you know, it also gives us a lot of room to innovate. And I feel like with the way that, like, you know, I still feel like webcomics are fresh. You know, mm-hmm. I feel like it hasn't found its like proper grounding in the world. You know, there's no like set format. There's no set thing that it's published to. And so, you know, when it comes to pop culture, I'm always looking at the same stuff too. I mean, I have my classical influences, but at the same time, you know, if something new comes out and it catches my eye, I'm all into it. You know, I mean, I was just reading Horizon, the image book Horizon is fantastic, you know, like totally, you know, just something I caught my eye in the store. I picked it up, I started reading it, you know. As far as like mainstream pop culture, you know, again, like hip hop, huge influence on my stuff. I like new stuff, I like Pressure, I like, you know, Young MA and a bunch of the new guys, you know. Anything. I mean, movies too. Movies are a huge influence on me. I'm a huge like cinephile. I don't know how much you guys like movies or whatever.
Oh, yeah,
a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a parallel there to like movies and comics, you know. And
yeah, visual storytelling. It's
absolutely
it's
visual. Yeah, yeah.
I don't think talkies are gonna stick.
Yeah. No, it's cool. And the reason I think I like comics more than I like film, or that I like you know, novelization and books and all that stuff, is because it inhabits this like cool space in between where sort of books give you everything interior. You know, books can do a great job of spelling out what's happening inside someone and giving you these like really in-depth observations of the world around you and allow your imagination to fill that stuff in based on the information you're getting.
Got it.
Film gives you everything. Like film is like dope in the other sense where basically it just gives you everything. Like we're going to give you sound. I'm going to show you exactly what I want you to look at. I'm going to tell you exactly what I want to tell you in this part of the story and all that stuff. It just hands you everything. So you, really in film, you're along for the ride. You don't really participate. Whereas like in books, you participate way more, right?
Yeah. And, yeah.
But comics are that cool middle space where it's like, it's both, you know, like not only like as a creator, you as the reader are taking full part in what's happening, because I can only give you sort of in-betweens of actions, and it's up to you as the reader to fill that stuff in. And I think that that's like just such a cool thing, you know, that I can like lead or like give pieces of something and someone else comes around and puts their own spin on it. You know, like the comic I draw will never be as cool as the comic that's in your head. But if I set things up properly, I can make that the coolest thing you've ever thought of. It's not what I've thought of. It's what you're thinking based on what I've done.
You know? Like setting the stage or something.
Yeah, like exactly. Exactly. And that stuff is like a lot of fun to me. I really enjoy that part of it. I don't know. I guess I got off track there too.
Sorry. No. That's what this is about, is getting to know you guys. So
yeah.
Is there a particular comics that you're reading right now that?
So I just, like I said, I just put down Horizon. Mm-hmm. Horizon probably like the thing I'm reading, and then I just picked up and read the I'm halfway through the second volume of Fatal. I know I'm definitely late on that stuff, but that book's incredible. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys read it. Fatal, Ed Brubaker, Sean Phillips.
I have not read that. No.
Yeah.
Oh, it's incredible, man. You should definitely read it. Amazing storytellers. Really, really good.
We'll add that to the list.
There's several volumes deep in that too, so you guys have got plenty to catch up on, just like myself.
Yeah.
What about you, Sam? What kind of stuff are you into? That sounded really dirty. I didn't mean it that way.
Let's get dirty, Sam.
Let's see. So, books I'm currently reading. I'm currently going through all the old Go Nagai stuff. So I'm rereading old Mazinger stuff, and you know, because it's for me, I want to make sure I pay tribute and homage to the sources that he gave me so much fun, at the same time not do any of the stuff that they made. Be like, all right, I want to make sure I'm not ripping these guys off, you know, because subconsciously, you know, read something like you know, one of my favorite stories of all time is the Lone Wolf and Cub series, and you know, to me, it's one of the most perfect comics. It was a good long run, you know, but it has an end, and I think stories need to have endings, and I've got one for Commander Kaiju, but I don't want to do it for, you know, 20, 30 years. But other books that I'm reading, I read a couple books all the time. The same books, like The Amazing Scrawn Head, at least once a day. No, I'm just kidding. I'm reading quite a bit, though. But, I'm not picking up any of the mainstream stuff right now, only because I just haven't had time. It's on my list. There's a lot of things that are out that are on my list, but I just, you know, I don't have a subscription or a pull box anywhere right now, which, you know, is problematic. However, every time I do go into a comic shop, which is pretty frequent, I always pick up a book. You know, I was reading Darth Vader there. And just loved. I love Darth Vader. So, like, you know, I just enjoyed the heck out of his series. You know, I'm looking forward to seeing some of the IDW Star Wars stuff that they got on the horizon. You know, there's a couple other books that are out that I want to read, because I'm getting ready to go to Free Comic Book Day at Ultimate Comics in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. I think I'm at the Cary location. So when I go in there, I'm going to have to buy some books, because that's my rule. So if they still have, what's that, the Batman Flash lenticular cover with the little Watchman?
Yeah, the button.
Smiley. Yeah, the button storyline. I just picked that up.
I saw, you know, just the image to me was striking. I was like, I'd like to know what's going on. I know these characters. I'd like to see what they're doing with them. So, yeah. I, you know, again, that's on my list. I usually pick up the trades, and you know, if I get in a shop, then I pick up regular singles. But you know, yeah, I just haven't been picking up a lot of stuff lately, just because I have a back catalog of all this old stuff. Because like, I am not an avid manga reader. I mean, there, you know, I read the Naruto stuff, and let's see, read some of the Bleach stuff, but like, I don't regularly pick them up, you know. So and when you're going back and you're like, okay, I'm gonna get all the works of Guy, then it's like, oh, I gotta shell out some money for this crap. But you know, it's like, it can get expensive. I mean, because I have on my shelves right now just a ton of other books that I'm going through. They're all like animation books, and it's like Disney, The Art of Story, The Art of Animation, The Art of Design. You know, I've got this lifestyle illustration of the 50s and 60s book that just showed up. Oh, I just got the fantastic, anyone who's into character design, Steven Silver just put out a book called The Silver Way, and you can get it for like under $30 on Amazon. And it is one of the most comprehensive, fantastically done character design books. Something that anyone that wants to work in the animation industry in particular, but you know, if they want to just learn how to come up with characters and draw them solidly and turn them around and put up, his book is right now the pinnacle of character design books out there. It's so comprehensive. It's like 300 something pages. I contributed on the Kickstarter, so I got like the special hardcover edition.
Nice.
You know, floppies on, you know, but that, you know, but like just going through that and like sharpening the tools, so to speak. You know, I want to get back to fun reading. I'm not allowed to do it right now because I'm sharpening those tools. But it's okay, because when I get to the fun reading, it's, I go through it so fast.
Nice.
Nice.
All right. Well, I guess, I don't know, is there anything else that you guys want to talk about or mention or promote?
Any appearances you might have coming up?
Yeah.
We're going to be doing a Tidewater Comic Con.
Yeah, so Tidewater Comic Con.
Have you out there?
13th and 14th.
Yeah, and I'll also be at Free Comic Book Day at Heroes Aren't Hard to Find in Charlotte, North Carolina on the first Saturday of May. Free Comic Book Day.
Yeah.
Nice.
And, yeah. Sam's got a Patreon.
Oh, yeah. Share your guys' Patreon information.
Yeah.
So my Patreon address is patreon.com/ Sam Ellis.
How did you come up with that? Sorry.
My parents did it. They were like. But yeah, and then Hoyt's got.
Yeah, my Patreon is patreon.com/ Hoyt Silva. HOYTSILVA.
Mine's spelled with a silent M and four Qs.
Dude, you know what, I automatically spell my name anytime I say it to anybody because everybody gets it wrong when they spell it. I don't know what it is, but like even today I went to the Ace Hardware thing. We're doing this whole garden thing at the house and you know, at the apartment, and we went to go buy potting soil, and I'm signing up for the Ace Hardware like points card because it's right across the street. I should have gotten this points card years ago, but you know, whatever. My name, I literally spelled out the name, you know, anagrammed it and everything. And she spelled it, instead of H-O-Y-T, she spelled it H-O-W-T. And I had to, like, how does a Y sound?
How?
I get it all the time. I get it all the time. So I gotta spell it.
Wait, that's a very attractive man. So, and she thought, hot.
I think she just misspelled that. If you would have met this girl, you wouldn't have thought that.
All right, guys. Well, yeah, it was great having you guys on. I don't know. I
appreciate you letting us talk your ear off, man.
Yeah, no problem. No problem. We enjoy this. Yeah. So, yeah, I guess we'll go ahead and sign off right now. And then. So.
Cool.
All right.
Well, awesome. Thank you all so much for having us, man. I really appreciate it.
No problem.
Thank
you. Oh, it's Rick back again. As you could probably tell, both Sam Ellis and Hoyt Silver were awesome guys, and we loved having them on our podcast. We take them back on our podcast any day. So please check out their website, justcomicsgroup.com, and also check out our website, allofmyissues.com. You can also find us on both Facebook, Twitter, and on YouTube at All of My Issues. Thanks for listening.